Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Even though it's the new year, Christmas isn't over. The 12th day is January 6th, so it is completely appropriate and seasonal that Milwaukee's Bach Chamber Choir and Orchestra is planning to perform its holiday concert this Sunday afternoon.
The Chamber Choir and Orchestra is a volunteer organization, and it's been around for more than 40 years. Its current director, Brian McLinden, has not been with the choir quite that long, but it has been a while. He joins me in the studio now. Brian, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks very much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about the Bach Chamber Choir and Orchestra. You're in your 21st year as directing these folks.
I had to think about that the other day.
Oh my gosh, it's like an entire generation of singers has gone through.
It is. There are several in the group who were there my very first year who are still there in the group and are great supporters. There's no one in the group now who was there from the very first year. The group started in 69. It took them about 3 or 4 or 5 years to sort of get off the ground. Russell Freeman started the group. And back then, there were a couple of large symphonic choruses in the area, but there weren't a lot of chamber choirs other than academic chamber choirs. There wasn't a great venue for that type of music. And so that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to perform concerts in the area of chamber choral music and associated music. And of course, you mentioned that in Bach, one of the first names that comes up, with all of the cantatas and the pieces that he wrote. So it was natural to start with Bach, and they figured that it would be a good draw, and so they chose Bach as the namesake of the group.
Now, when you talk about chamber choirs, are you talking specifically size, numbers of choristers?
Okay. Yeah, generally 30 to 40, more than that, and you get into a large chorus as opposed to a chamber choir. Some chamber choirs are even smaller, and we have been as small as about 25 and as large as about 40, depending upon the program that we're doing and the year.
So you're talking not too many voices on a part.
Correct. Sometimes it could be as few as 2 or 3 on a part.
Okay. And what does that do for a chorus person, for somebody who's singing in something like that? How is that different for them than singing in something large, like, say, something that Brahms or Mahler or one of those?
Well, it's interesting. You get sort of two different approaches. I think my sister, who lives in New England area, sings in the Tanglewood Festival Chorus and has for years, and she loves doing the large choral works. But in a small ensemble, I think, first of all, you realize how important your part is. You can't hide behind the other singers. You really have to know your music. At the same time, there's a certain, I think, an intimacy for the choral members, and I don't mean to slight larger works. But there's a lot of very subtle things that you can do, combination of voices. And I think if you're committed to a large ensemble, you're also committed to rather large choral works. And some of them can be very, very difficult to pull off and very long and take a lot of time and practice. And my hat's off to the members of the symphony chorus and those groups. It is a large time commitment. And so I think one of the things about a chamber ensemble is that we rehearse once a week for 2.5 hours over the course of our season, starting in August and going through until the end of May, beginning of June, and we have the summer off. And I think it fits the schedule for a lot of people. We have people who are church musicians, but mostly our members are professionals who are volunteers. They come at it because they love to do it.
But this is a volunteer organization with the exception of yourself and the accompanist,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. Correct.
So people are doing this because they love the music. And
yes.
There's no other opportunity to sing it.
Exactly. And that was also one of the focuses of the group in its early years was to not only to sing Bach, but to sing music that was not getting heard at the time in the area other than in academic settings.
Such as?
There were a lot of Renaissance music, a lot of contemporary music. In the very early years, they would do, and we still do, works by contemporary composers that are perhaps not getting heard And so the key is to sort of balance that with the works that you know that the audience want to hear and that the singers want to sing as well. It's always a balancing act when we're planning out the season to figure out what pieces. But I think most of our singers in the group, I would say all of our singers in the group actually, are sensitive enough that they want new challenges. They want to try something different, and you want to mix the old with the new.
Some of the fun things about the Renaissance stuff is you get more than four parts. You know, sometimes you're five, six, seven parts, and all of those middle voices get to do a lot of interesting things.
And they're all equal.
Yes.
And
everybody's
all
important.
Everyone's important. And we've done a few madrigal programs recently. We've done a whole wide variety. I would say that three-quarters of what we do is generally sacred music. We are a non-denominational group, but we do perform mostly in churches in the area. We perform the works not necessarily, you know, from a sacred point of view, but because they're great works and need to be heard. But we also venture off. We've done opera choruses. We've done Broadway. We've done we did a concert a number of years back with the Reedy Buzzards, which are a local bluegrass group, a quartet. And so we did a concert of spirituals and bluegrass, sort of a mixture. And we arranged some of their pieces for a backing ensemble. So we look for a whole wide variety of things to sing.
And does that keep you interested 21 years into it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about it is we have a number of people in the group who have been with us for a long time, and we always solicit suggestions from the group at the end of the year for the next year when we start playing the next season. And we get great suggestions from people in the group, pieces that they maybe sang in another choir somewhere and we've never done before. Pieces by composers that most people haven't heard of, and it's great. So they throw out ideas, and we put together programs, and we have a lot of fun.
So in the 21 years that you've been at the helm of this, how has the ensemble changed?
Ooh, interesting. I think it goes through cycles. That's a tough question. I was actually thinking about that on the way down here. I think the interesting thing is it's the old adage that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Every time you think that you've taken a new turn, you all of a sudden realize that you've come back to something familiar. Boy, I'm at a loss to try to explain that, I think.
Has it grown musically?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely, absolutely. We do a lot of challenging works. We've done a lot more in recent years, collaborations with other ensembles, too, as well. We did a piece with the Lutheran A Cappella and the Concord Chamber Orchestra. We did a program a few years back with them. We did a program with the Milwaukee Chamber Orchestra, Saint-Saëns Christmas Oratorio, and the Holst Christmas Day. That was a few years back. I think that the members of the group who have been with us a long time have grown, and I think probably the biggest thing I've noticed is their influence in the group and their sense of ownership of the group, and that really helps. That helps me a lot.
Well, how do you get new members? I'm assuming there is an audition process.
There is an audition process. It's not particularly hard or long. There is a little bit of sight singing, although that's not a make or break for me. We'd have a number of people in the group who are good sight singers, and if you have all the other qualities and are not particularly a strong sight reader, it is not a break sort of thing for you. I listen for, we do a lot of Renaissance music and Baroque music, which requires a, sort of a straighter tone. So I listen for the tone quality of the voice, the person's register, their flexibility.
You say flat tone, you're talking about not so much vibrato.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. Right. And it's more a question of being able to control it. Sometimes we do romantic pieces, so I'd like to have a fuller sound. I call it adding color. I hate to actually use the word vibrato because it gives people
they think of that really wide,
exactly,
you know,
exactly,
drive the truck through.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I prefer to call it adding color. But the important thing is being able to control the color, being able to take it out when we need it and add it when we need it. And so, obviously, range is important. We have a lot of singers in recent years who have sung in high school and college and then have moved on to the professional world and just haven't sung for 4 or 5 or 6 years and want to get back into it. That's where a lot of our members are coming from now. A good portion are people who sing in their church choirs and love it, but want something that's a little more challenging. A little more opportunity.
Do you have auditions once a year, twice a year?
Actually, they're ongoing.
Ongoing.
Ongoing. We advertise them at the beginning of the year, but I will take people throughout the course of the year. That's the other thing, too, is that, you know, once you're in the group, there's a I shouldn't say this on the air. There's a certain flexibility. We have people who will join, and then for some reason, because of work or whatever, will have to take off a little bit of time. But once you're in, you're in. And I think that there's a certain loyalty there. People know that, and they're grateful for that. So they don't abuse it, and they come back and join us. So we always have a number of people who are on a leave of absence, quote unquote.
Okay. It makes room for other people.
It does.
Well. Yeah.
It does. And I think we pick up people from our concerts, people who hear us who have never heard us before, people who join the group and go back and tell their friend, this is great, you should try it. And
so word of mouth is always the best advertising, I think.
It is. Yeah. And it works for us. It works for us. So and not being a large choir, we don't have to hold sort of cattle call auditions. We can take people one at a time, which is good for me because then I can look at the group we have now and say, is this person going to be a fit for our ensemble for what we're doing?
Speaking of the ensemble and what you're doing now, concert coming up on the 4th, which is really nice to have something after Christmas. So many things happen right before and nobody can get to everything.
And if you have a group made up of people who are singing their church choirs, they're going to be busy.
Right.
The other thing, too, is that, you know, Christmas, technically, the 12 days of Christmas is from December 25th until Epiphany. That's the season lasts, that's long. And so we always like to, we've been doing an Epiphany program for a number of years. And I think people find it refreshing, a chance to one last Christmas hurrah, and everyone else has forgotten about it and moved on, but we haven't.
Right. So what is on the concert this year?
Vivaldi's Gloria.
Which is a wonderful piece.
It's a wonderful piece. It's great to sing. Everyone loves it. The singers love singing it. It's a piece that we've done several times. We bring it back maybe every 6 or 7 years. Somebody around the area is going to do it, and it just so happens that I think we're not competing too much this year. So we're doing the Vivaldi Gloria, a few choruses from Messiah, a few movements from the Bach Christmas Oratorio, and then some a cappella pieces, including a couple originals of mine. So
wonderful. So you are also a composer as well.
I am.
And this gives you a canvas on which to paint.
It does. And the members of the group are always so wonderful and gracious when I bring something new to them. And they take great care with it. And I'm very grateful to them for that.
Well, I am looking forward. Actually, I unfortunately won't be able to hear it because I will be in New Hampshire visiting my family for the holidays. But I will catch you on when's the next concert after the 4th?
The next concert is at the end of April and the beginning of May. We're doing two programs. Let me get my notes out here. And we're doing the Randall Thompson, The Peaceable Kingdom as the featured piece. And then other pieces that sort of deal with animals in the kingdom sort of thing. And we'll do one concert on 26th of April, 3 o'clock at St. Christopher's and River Road. And then the other one's going to be at Pius High School on the May the 3rd. We rehearse at Pius, and so we have sort of a cooperative.
And I understand they have a really nice facility.
They have a beautiful facility. This is their second year. Mm-hmm. We sang there last year and this year as well. It's a wonderful facility, and so we're looking forward to singing there in that.
Well, terrific. Well, Brian, thank you so much for introducing us to the Bach Chamber Choir and Orchestra. Thank you for coming in, and best of luck.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Brian McClendon is director and conductor of Milwaukee's Bach Chamber Choir and Orchestra. The choir has its holiday performance this Sunday, January 4th at 3 p.m. at the St. Joseph Chapel on South Layton Boulevard.
Coming up next, Bach to Rock and Roll. We'll hear about a new book with more than 30 years of Milwaukee rock concert photographs when we return. You are listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.